Welcome to our North Square Investments Active Insights podcast. North Square Investments is dedicated to bringing differentiated active investment strategies to financial advisors and investors through our multi-boutique asset management platform. Today, Mark Goodwin, Chief Executive Officer of North Square Investments, will discuss international equities and building high conviction equity portfolios with John Huck, Chief Investment Officer with Altrinsic Global Advisors. Altrinsic is a partner firm in the North Square platform and sub-advisor to North Square Altrinsic International Equity Fund. Mark and John, we look forward to your discussion.
Thanks, Diane. As you mentioned, at North Square, we seek out best-in-class active managers for our platform, and our partners at Altrinsic have a history of success with their fundamental approach to equity investing across global markets. John, first, welcome. Altrinsic has managed equity portfolios for over 20 years, primarily for institutional clients. Your investment approach is very research intensive with a focus on stock selection. Can you talk about what characteristics are most important to you as you evaluate a stock to ultimately become a position in your equity portfolio?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Mark. The core ingredients are really two things: quality of business and price paid or valuation. So as we focus on quality, what does that mean? It means different things to different people. For us, empirically, it means focusing on companies with sustainable returns on capital or returns on invested capital, and or companies with improving returns on invested capital. So to discover that or to evaluate that, what we'll do is focus first and foremost on a company's competitive advantage, the durability of that competitive advantage. Focus on the management team, really asking three key questions. So these people do what they say they do. Is there success or failure in the past because of what they've done or in spite of what they've done? But really, what's their strategy and execution plan going forward over the long term? Then another key ingredient of quality has to do with balance sheet. You know, are they prudent balance sheet managers, which is vital over the very long term? How do these various factors come together to impact profitability, returns on capital, and ultimately the per share value of the business? And then secondly, the valuation that I mentioned up front. For us, the focus is really looking at the intersection of at least three different valuation measures, all focused on the very long term. What's the company's valuation now relative to its long-term normal, sustainable earnings power? What is the valuation in the context of a discounted cash flow? Again, looking beyond the current earnings, but what are those earnings and cash flow metrics going to be looking out 3, 4, and 5 years? What's the risk associated with those? Then lastly, valuation in the context of a private market transaction. What deal activity is being done out there and how are those metrics comparing? So essentially just quality of business and price paid.
John, as you're constructing the portfolio, how do you balance your return goals with a consideration for risk management, given that you're investing across sectors and across regions and have different currency exposures and local economic exposures? Give us some sense there.
Yeah, Mark, I like that you use the word balance, because a lot of people, when they talk about risk, they look at it as a statistic or as a single isolated thing, but it really has to be evaluated in the context of the opportunity. So for us, it really begins at the company specific level, where we're looking for an asymmetric skew, whereby if we're right in our analysis, we can make our clients a lot of money. And if we're wrong, we have protection to a degree in terms of the margin of safety of the business. So we're really at the company specific level, focusing on that asymmetric skew, as you know, demonstrated by our analysis. How do we do that? Again, that's that focus in our base case scenarios on what are the long-term normal sustainable earnings power of the business. We have deep engagement in the capital structures of our business. A common mistake of a lot of value investors is they don't put proper attention on the capital structure or the debt side of the balance sheet. Consideration of macro, then ultimately we apply conservative assumptions to our cost of capital. Ultimately, in our process, additionally, as we think of risk, Mark, where we have a peer review where all eyes go on all ideas. So there's a number of checks and balances. And then ultimately, the portfolios are constructed at the portfolio construction level with a prudent respect for concentrations, with some broad parameters that are really intended to ensure that that which we think we're good at and different at the company specific level is what's driving performance, as opposed to unintended systematic factors or other things. And ultimately, what does that mean for the end client or investor in the North Square Altrinsic International portfolio? It means a behavioral characteristic where when markets are high and there's a lot of risk in market, you may find well below market risk embedded in our portfolio. At the same time, you know, stealing from Sir John Templeton's quote, you know, you want to be greedy when others are fearful. When there's a lot of fear markets is typically when you'll see a greater degree of risk in the portfolio as we're buying into that fear in perhaps more cyclical businesses.
Thanks, John. To distill it down further, what do you see as the key driver, or as I like to say, secret sauce of your portfolio performance over time?
Well, it's the combination of two things. It's that focusing on the company specific, and really when we look at a company, Mark, our starting point is, what do we see differently than everybody else? And as a long-term investor, would we buy that business outright with our own capital? So it begins at the company specific level. And empirically now for over 23 years, I think what any investor should expect over the very long term is that the company specific and the idiosyncratic elements should be the drivers. In other words, we're not making macro calls on countries or regions and styles and the sort, but it's really that company specific work, which is essentially a function of our team and our investment process. And secondly, is that approach to risk that I briefly alluded to at the portfolio level, where we have an obsession for risk, but not in the context of the way it is popularly perceived in our industry, but it's really a tireless pursuit of what are the unintended risk factors that are out there in the marketplace, but also in the portfolio that could disrupt what we are focusing on that we think is different at the company specific level.
That's very helpful. John, the Fed has aggressively raised interest rates for much of 2022 and into the current year, and other developed markets have followed. Globally, inflation has been very high and economic growth has slowed. We have also seen significant geopolitical tensions that have added to volatility as well. How have these various global challenges impacted international economies as well as their equity markets?
Well, every economy in the world has been impacted by this, and clearly we're entering a new era, you know, so to speak. So, I mean, there's a lot in your question we can unpack, but as it pertains to interest rates, I should preface this, Mark, by saying we are not macro investors. We consider and we respect macro from the perspective of risk, but we certainly have opinions. So in terms of interest rates, which everyone seems to be focused on right now, yes, we're probably closer to the end of the rates hike cycle. And that's what markets seem to be focused on globally, but they're probably not fully appreciating the extent that these reversal of policies have significant lagged effects. So at some point, markets should begin and economies should begin to reflect, you know, some of these efforts that have been made in the last, you know, 6, 12, 18 months. And those are dampening effects. More specific to your question, in terms of, you know, how this affects the global economy, well, it's interesting. First, we got to remember that stocks are leading indicators, right? So typically a great economy may or may not be a great investment. Sometimes economies, when there's a lot of negative headlines, present the best underlying company-specific investments. Using Europe as an example, last year, you know, Europe was, you know, had a lot of headlines around it because, you know, the assault on its front door steps in the Ukraine. Concern about gas prices, et cetera. Well, this year, Europe is one of the best performing markets in the world. Natural gas prices have collapsed. The point is that markets adapt. These are, you know, they rarely do things play out the way they are perceived on the front page. And oftentimes, the more murky the front page, the more compelling the bottom-up specific opportunity that exists. So in Europe framework, yes, there's a lot of issues in Europe surrounding Ukraine. A lot of that is discounted in the marketplace. There's always a low probability, high consequence, adverse outcome, but that exists in all markets, including the United States. We can unpack this later when we get into the portfolio, but we see a lot of opportunity in Europe. Up until recently, that value has been more among your companies domiciled in Europe, but those that operate on a global scale, think global consumer and healthcare franchises. Move over to Japan. Japan's been dealing with a lot of the deflationary pressures the world encountered for, you know, a couple decades, right? So this burst of inflation is potentially a good thing as long as it doesn't get out of control. There's tremendous value to be unlocked in Japan. There's a lot of change taking place, albeit at a Japanese pace, which is kind of slow. But like many things in the world, some of the most important and powerful things happen very slowly and then real fast. That's how we see Japan today. Interesting to see Warren Buffett the other day getting a lot of airtime on his recent trip to Japan, visiting a lot of the holding companies. So you're seeing more of that. You're seeing more private equity activity. So regardless of the economy, there's opportunities there. China, slow to open, but it's opening with a roar. Every company which we own that is either directly in China or has business in China is seeing robust increase in its growth rates coming out of China. And then lastly, I comment on emerging markets more broadly. Surprisingly, you know, typically if there was a landmine in the world, the emerging market central bank would step on it. You know, they've learned a lot of lessons. So more so than developed markets, a lot of emerging market economies, emerging market policymakers have been a bit ahead of the curve in addressing inflation and rising interest rates. So that I don't want to paint an overly rosy picture. In fact, we think there's going to be a lot of challenges going forward at the broad economic level, but there's going to be a lot of innovation. Companies will adapt. There will be growth. It's just not going to be as much growth as there was in the past.
John, staying in Asia for a minute, looking at the strains between China and the U.S., are you seeing potential shifts in the global supply chain towards other countries? And if so, what countries do you expect to benefit from these shifts? Or are there particular industries that are or will drive these changes?
Yeah, huge shifts underway. The big shift being one of efficiency to one of resiliency. And these are seismic shifts that are going to take place in very, very long term. However, that pace is going to be a lot slower than people think, a lot slower than the media presents it to being. You can't just pick up, you know, change your supply chain overnight if you're a multinational or, you know, institution. So we're already seeing meaningful benefits of this coming out of the ASEAN, you know, Southeast Asian countries, Indonesia, you know, to a lesser extent, you know, Taiwan in certain cases, Vietnam, you're seeing being a beneficiary of this in Latin America, Mexico, Brazil, but throughout the whole Latin America region. So, and even here in our backyard in middle America, you're seeing, you know, the seeds being planted. But these are going to be very, 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 very long term. So, essentially, what are the implications? I think the opportunity on this market is more at the company specific level. And in terms of technology and innovation, there's a lot of attention always focused on the primary layer of that innovation, the tech companies. And because of that, they're granted very high valuation. But a lot of the opportunities, the structural sources of opportunity, are traditional industrial businesses that have been embracing in technology, going through digitizing their businesses, and are playing a role in that nearshoring, onshoring, and helping, you know, their customers become more efficient in their ways. So long with the answer to saying, yes, it's huge. It's going to take longer than people think, but the beneficiaries go far beyond the countries that are often presented in the media.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Kind of a two-part question in terms of your longer-term view, you know, maybe, you know, 12, 18 months out with respect to recession or no recession, soft landing, where equity markets around the globe might offer the best opportunities for investors with this medium to longer term horizon.
Right. So as you said, we have no crystal ball on that, but we're pretty deeply engaged and get most of our perspective from the companies in which we're investing in our time spent traveling around the world. So I think what is a pretty safe bet is that the next 10 years are going to be very, very different than the last 10 years. That's table stakes. Now, that doesn't mean there's not going to be growth, there's not going to be innovation, it's just going to be perhaps slower growth than it was in the past. If you dial that down to the more the short term, the intermediate term, one of the areas that we're probably more concerned than most on is earnings in many more cyclical areas in many countries. There's a lot of trend extrapolation, and meaning a lot of very aggressive earnings estimates out there in the marketplace that could be a source of meaningful disappointment. So perhaps an earnings recession in certain popular areas. So we're very mindful of that as one of the key risks out there. But more broadly, I think the risk of a major disruption in markets out there is quite low. Areas that we are very closely dialed in on, that could be sources, that could be commercial real estate here in the United States, and that could be more than a U.S. phenomena. So you could see a circular cycle involving commercial real estate and U.S. regional banks becoming very, very ugly. It's not a super high probability, but it's a reasonable probability outcome. So, you know, as value investors, we're always very mindful of the things that can go wrong, of which there's plenty. But I think one's base case should be is, hey, we're just working our way out of this broad, you know transition. The most important thing, though, from an investment perspective is that there's a major regime change underway. And that comes back to that first point I mentioned earlier about the next 10 years being very different than the past 10 years. First, we won't have that tailwind of stable, benign inflation and falling interest rates. We're not going to have that tailwind of lower tax rates in the world. We're not going to have that tailwind of decreased regulation. In fact, many of those things that were, if you decompose these at the company specific level, these things were very additive to return on equity per share. So that's why one can't just look at the quality of the business. You have to look at the valuation and price paid much more so than in the previous 10 years. So I'm rambling a bit there on you, but you know, the world's a big place. Those are some points to share. So maybe I should frame this out in terms of where we see the opportunity for the North Square Intrinsic International portfolio and where we've been investing, or would you like to discuss more macro issues, Mark?
Yeah, no, I think that would be a good pivot. And just to recap for folks, you sub-advised the North Square Altrinsic International Equity Fund, the ticker NSIVX. So maybe if you could, you know, comment, you know, broadly as the markets have shifted over the past 12 to 18 months, how did the fund's investment portfolio change, and what's the current positioning for the NSIVX portfolio?
Sure. There's been huge volatility and variability in markets during that time frame, which you mentioned. So looking back to the last 12 to 18 months, in 2022, we saw opportunities in value begin to emerge in a few key areas. One, in some of those industrial related businesses that I had mentioned. So we bought into a number of those or added positions to existing positions. Secondly, in a number of emerging market related businesses, we have positions in ranging from Korean banks to Indian bank HDFC. We bought into Brazilian institutions. So emerging markets, after underperforming for a number of years, began to offer a lot of value at a time when they're making tremendous initiatives to improve the financial productivity of the underlying core businesses. And the third cluster would be pretty much a wide variety of businesses across industries that had a bit more of a cyclical tilt to them. As we entered the fourth quarter, that opportunity set transitioned. There wasn't a tremendous amount of activity in the portfolio. And as we come into this year, and as you look at the portfolio today, right now we have about 65 positions in the portfolio. Each one we'd be perfectly comfortable owning outright with our own capital if we were a private equity buyer of that underlying businesses. Second point would be that the embedded risk in the portfolio, Mark, is well below that of the market. That's not targeted. That's just a byproduct of the types of companies where we found value and that approach to risk that we mentioned earlier. Now, we will not always be below market risk. And if the portfolio increases, it's oftentimes the result of opportunities emerging in more cyclical or volatile areas. Regionally, well-diversified, certain notable differences versus broad markets would be first that increase in emerging market exposure, which is currently around 14 or 15%. So that is up materially. And that we think is a very favorable asymmetric skew upside considering the downside. The second area would be in Japan. Our Japanese exposure is down to 11, 12% because we've sold a few positions as they approach our intrinsic value. We have a very healthy pipeline of ideas there. We like a lot of the change that we're seeing. So we're technically underweight, but a good pipeline of new ideas surfacing there and good idea flow. Largest exposure is in Europe. I alluded to earlier in Europe, the bulk of our position are companies that are headquartered there, but they really operate on a global scale. Many of these could be leading consumer franchises. Think, you know, Heineken, for example, or Diageo, or it could be leading healthcare franchises. Now, in that, as I framed out the last 12 to 18 months, more value began to emerge in certain industrial-related businesses. So we redeployed capital to new and existing positions in that area. We actually bought our first bank in quite some time in a developed market, you know, late last year. That was BBVA, which, you know, and I'll expand upon that for 1 second. The true economic value of the driver of the business is its Mexican franchise. And it has other tidbits around the world. So lots of value to be unleashed there. So anyway, that gives you a bit of a framework for the positioning. But if I were to sum it up, very different from the benchmark, below market risk, heavy concentration in high quality compounders, heavy non-bank financial related businesses. We see a lot of opportunity in financials, just less so in developed market banks with a few new exceptions a la BBVA. Then lastly, just a range of those more idiosyncratic stock-specific situations in both developed and emerging markets.
That's a great summary. Final question for you. U.S. investors are typically underinvested in international securities. How do you see an actively managed high conviction international strategy like the Altrinsic NSIVX fund being best positioned in the diversified portfolio of an investor, and what are the key benefits to them?
Well, the key benefits are just the scope for long-term absolute returns. You look at the quality defined as returns on equity of the asset class, not to mention those that we own, and map that out against the valuation. It's a very compelling proposition, certainly versus other public equities, very much so. I know private equity and alternatives become quite popular. By any measure, the opportunity set that you see in public markets right now is far more compelling, according to us, than what you can see in private markets. So the absolute return story is legitimate and it's compelling. And then secondly, just the diversification benefits. Now, if you have a client who thinks the next 10 years will be similar to the last 10 years, no, then you should not go anywhere near this stuff, or have just a little bit. But any other scenario, which there's a wide range of outcomes, diversification benefits alone will be quite meaningful. In terms of the role or the positioning, I defer to the professional advisor who knows their client's age, the risk tolerance, and then other issues. So I'll defer to them on that.
John, thank you for joining me today. This has been a great discussion.
Thank you, Mark. Always available to chat.
Thank you for tuning in to our North Square Active Insights podcast. For more information on North Square Investments, our partners, and investment solutions, please visit our website at www.northsquareinvest.com. Nothing contained in this communication constitutes tax, legal, or investment advice. Investors must consult their tax advisor or legal counsel for advice and information concerning their particular situation. This podcast contains certain statements that may include forward-looking statements. Although Altrinsic Global Advisors believes that the expectations reflected in these forward-looking statements are reasonable, they do involve assumptions, risks, and uncertainties, and these expectations may prove to be incorrect. Actual events could differ materially from those anticipated in these forward-looking statements as a result of a variety of factors. You should not place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. This podcast reflects Altrinsic's views and opinions as of the date herein, which are subject to change without notice at any time based on market and other conditions. We disclaim any responsibility to update these views. These views should not be relied on as investment advice or an indication of trading intention.